The Institute for the Humanities at Salado presents Understanding Vietnam, Code 1-48-82, Welcome and Introduction by Dr. Harry Wilmer, and Discussion by Richard Ellison.
Where we can examine the Vietnam experience in a thoughtful, intense, and balanced way with important people in the history of the Vietnam era. I am grateful to these distinguished visitors and speakers from coming from near and far away to our village, our town. And I hope that all of you will not only bring us your wisdom, but that you will leave having more understanding out of the ferment of the events of this weekend. The vision of this experience, of this symposium, could only take place away from the academic, government, and industrial institutions. Here we are in Salado for an informal and open conference where we can all speak our minds and ask the questions we have probably waited almost too long to ask, to seek and to find. I want to thank the many people whose labor have made this event possible. A few must be recognized now. Joe M. Green, Jr., who is in the audience, president of the Rockwell Fund in Houston, whose generosity has made this program possible and has made the Institute possible. We thank James Veninga, executive director of the Texas Committee for the Humanities, and Roy Mirsky, chairman of the Texas Committee for the Humanities, for their generous grant, and James Veninga for his editing the current issue of the Texas Humanist devoted to this symposium, and co-editing the book which will be published of the proceedings of this symposium. I thank the Hogg Foundation, the University of Texas, and the Kempner Fund of Galveston, and the Harris Fund of Chicago, all of whom have given us generous grants. We're indebted to Polly Miller for her Herculean labor for many months, to Colonel Jack Knox for his organizational work, and for the loan of two elephants here that he brought back from Saigon, and Wilma Williams, the Institute Secretary, to Betty Sue Flowers and Robert Abzug, our humanist consultants and advisors, and to many others whose names time does not permit me to mention. Starting right now, we need the common sense of each one of you in the audience to help in the collective healing process of the Vietnam experience for ourselves and for our country. We have an opportunity to do exactly that. Walter Kapp, in a 1982 book entitled The Unfinished War, Vietnam and the American Conscience, concludes with these words, quote, "The largest question of all is whether the collective healing process will be encouraged or whether it will be interrupted or canceled by either utopian aspirations or cataclysmic expectations. A world so easily divided and so absolutely fragmented is in severe problems. The real issue is whether healing can occur and wholeness can be discovered before the trauma of the unfinished war is reenacted. In the light of this urgency, we have convened this gathering this weekend, dedicated to the encouraging of the understanding and therefore the healing process of the Vietnam nightmare. This will not come from high levels of cerebration and abstract thinking or the final words of authorities, but from feeling, understanding, and knowledge. I am confident that each of us will come away with new thoughts and new answers. In this regard, I will tell you a story of a Congress of philosophers and humanists who met recently in Chicago, and a very heated argument developed about a very fine point, which the philosophers felt could only be settled by reference to authority. And they hurried downstairs to the desk clerk, and one of them said, "Is there an Encyclopedia Britannica in the house?" "No, sir," replied the clerk. "What is it you wish to know?" "That's us. Tonight we want to know about and see the definitive television production of Vietnam. Due to technical problems, we will not see the Tet Offensive, but we will see a different sequence from the PBS documentary which Richard Ellison has brought from Boston to us. It is LBJ Goes to War. Mr. Richard Ellison is executive producer of this PBS series, which will be shown nationally a year from now. He has come from Boston with this film, which utilizes footage from over 60 international film archives stretching back 35 years. It is the most ambitious program, documentary program, ever undertaken by PBS, $4.1 million. We have tonight, I believe, the world premiere public showing. I want to introduce Mr. Ellison, who will tell us about the films and say a word why we need the elaborate production back there in the setup to show the film, which we have obtained from the University of Texas. And Mr. Ellison will lead a discussion of the film afterwards. He is formerly director of current affairs at PBS and a television producer from ABC and CBS. Mr. Ellison has written in a booklet that, quote, 50 years from now, when questions are asked about Vietnam, historians and students alike will have one invaluable resource, the PBS Vietnam series. The major support for this came from the for the research and development of this historic film series from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Until recently, and I wonder if it's still true, there was not a single grant that they were able to obtain from any American corporation to help in this project. This is shocking, and I'm sure the likely reasons will not escape you. WGBH, which is still struggling to raise money for the last hour of the series, which is called, quote, Aftermath, about the war which will not go away. That's the one they can't get the money for. It will be a commentary on our American civilization if the funds are not available for that, because it proposes to, quote, present the veterans' issues concerning delayed stress, Agent Orange, the impact of Vietnam on the military, U.S. economy, the Vietnam refugees, and the battle in our mind that is the Vietnam legacy. Mr. Ellison, it's an honor to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. that quote about 50 years from now was written by our publicist, and I will tell her that it was much appreciated here. I did not make such a boast about this series, and we do not ever use a term like definitive about a work of this kind in this medium, so close to the events under examination that obviously there are documents unavailable still, there are people unwilling to speak to the record, and we consider it a contribution to what we believe and hope should be a continuing dialogue about the issues that are raised by this historical period and examined in the series. I apologize very much for not being able to bring Tet 1968. A year and a half ago, when I lightheartedly accepted an invitation to come down here, it didn't even seem very real to me. I thought probably all the films would be finished or very nearly. I offered Harry his choice of a number of titles, none of which was complete at the time. He chose Tet. As it turned out, the first answer print, the first print from the cut negative of the Tet program was in the lab in New York last night. It was flown to Boston this morning. I threw it on the projector 1 hour before I was scheduled to come here, and the print was terrible. That happens in filmmaking. They use the wrong stock, and I simply couldn't allow it out of the shop. The film that you will see was made by the same producer, Austin Hoyt, who's a veteran WGBH producer on series like The Advocates, excuse me, and Ben Wattenberg's America, and so forth. I would like, though, before I get into any specifics about the film, just to say a couple of words about the origins of the project, if I may. I left the United States in the spring of 1968 to go to work in Europe as a producer for Time Life. I came back in the spring of 1975, having made trips intermittently, but brief ones. I was struck by many, many changes in American life between the two, but one which was particularly evident to me was the sudden disappearance of the subject of Vietnam from from conversation and from people's apparent interest, even though the 25-year investment that we had made in the government of South Vietnam had just recently gone down the drain with the fall of Saigon. As I went to Washington, started to work for PBS, started talking to more and more people, it seemed to me more and more apparent that this reticence on the subject of Vietnam was not the result of our having as a people, as a society, totally come to grips with the experience, absorbed it, and gone ahead having learned the so-called lessons of Vietnam. It didn't seem to me that was true at all. It looked as if it was some kind of mass repression, avoidance that was going on. And it seemed to me that television, which had contributed so much to the attention on the war when it was in progress, and in particular before the American troops were withdrawn, was a major contributor to the now absence of attention, even on such issues as veterans' problems. I'm speaking now of 76 and 77. So I was concerned about this, and all the more so when I learned that there were producers at the major networks who were trying to persuade their managements to do a major retrospective on the Vietnam era, and that they were being turned down consistently. And finally, excuse me, I learned that the film stocks, which had been used in the 60s and early 70s in Vietnam and elsewhere, the 16-millimeter color negative stocks, the very fast ones that had enabled the images to be captured in all sorts of difficult situations, had a short shelf life. They were already beginning to lose their color and definition, and they were going to disappear if something wasn't done. At that point, I decided that perhaps I ought to try to do something, and I joined forces with other people and set about trying to create an opportunity to do this series for public television, since it seemed clear that commercial television was not really interested in doing it. I went, eventually, with a proposal to the National Endowment for the Humanities. And the National Endowment for the Humanities is the major funder of this project. And I think it's a considerable tribute to the nature of our society that a major quasi-public organization like the endowment would be willing to make this investment in a subject which is almost inherently controversial to some degree, that is bound to make some people uncomfortable, that most, as you mentioned, Harry, most corporate institutions that customarily fund public television broadcasts have declined to support in this instance. There is one exception to that. The Chubb Group of insurance companies have become an underwriter for the series. Anyway, I think it's a considerable tribute to the endowment and to the nature of our open institutions that they would put funding into the project, and I hope the project will live up to their expectations and our desires. I'd also like to say that I'm not sure that there is another country where this kind of series on this kind of subject could be done. Even in a country like Britain, the Official Secrets Act and other kinds of restrictions would probably not make it possible for television to mount a major series on a series of events like the Vietnam War this close to when they occurred. In France, for example, where we had to, of course, go for film footage and other documentation dealing with the early period of the war and the pre-war years, we found that the Army archives and the First Indochina War are still not open entirely. They are restricted, and we had to acquire a French partner and go to considerable political lengths to get some access to their footage. Where here, all of the Armed Forces archives were fully open to us. We got complete cooperation from everyone. And I think I will not say anything more except that there are a few mistakes on this hurriedly drawn up sheet. Of course, Wayne Morse never was a general. The sixth name, which is very garbled, is actually Phuong Tay Tai, and he was the commanding officer on mainland North Vietnam and the islands that came under attack around the time of the Tonkin Gulf incident. And I'm not a lecturer. The lecture's on the projector. The projector is as elaborate as it is because what you're seeing is not quite a finished product. It is, again, a first answer print. That is to say, it is the first print struck from the negative of this particular program. It is lacking the main title, the closing credits, and what we call lower thirds. That is the identifications of people and the identifications of various elements of film. There are certain cases where we identify that the film is from a Hanoi archive, from an East German archive, or we date the film so that the event is dated for the viewer if the commentary doesn't mention it. And I'm sorry to say, those elements are all added electronically at the very last stage of post-production. We haven't got there yet. So you're not only seeing a premiere, but you're seeing an unfinished premiere. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you. Comments, questions, or whatever?
We have one person here who was up there in the administration. I'm not sure his initial reaction. Walt Rostow.
We're going to bring your microphone.
Having been something of an expert on distorted versions of Vietnam, I must say that I thought that was a job done with extraordinary good faith. I have one comment to make, or two perhaps, which might be remedied because they're additions. One thing about 1965, which is very rarely discussed, is the context not of Vietnam, but of the rest of Asia. President Johnson made his decisions in the spring and in July against a background in which Indonesia had left the UN and joined the Chinese in a grouping with North Korea, the Cambodians, as well as North Vietnam. And there was a Malaysian confrontation which absorbed a great deal of the effort of the British Commonwealth. There was the effort by Sukarno in increasing association with the Chinese communist leader A Dit to bring about the takeover of Indonesia, which was then attempted after President Johnson made his decision. The point is that President Johnson's decision was not a local decision on Vietnam, but it was a time in Asia, as the New Zealanders said, and the Australians, and Lee Kuan Yew in Singapore, and the Tonku in Malaysia, and so on, that all of Southeast Asia was at risk. There was nobody on the communist side or the non-communist side in the spring and summer of 1965 who doubted the domino theory. I have in my paper a quotation from the former Australian ambassador about the view from Australia at that time. I think that this, as I say, effort in extraordinary good faith would be strengthened if that larger Asian context was evoked. The other thing is that it was clear then, but it's even more clear now. It was clear then, even from the communications patterns of the North Vietnamese, that their objective was never to unite Vietnam. It was to take over the whole French colonial empire in Asia. And I think that dimension in Hanoi's ambitions, which, as I say, were clear to everyone then, should be suggested, because the image of the 60s among some, that this was a simple nationalist venture in which Laos and Cambodia were not involved, is not true. And on New Year's Day 1965, Chen Yi, the Chinese foreign minister at the reception of the diplomatic corps in Peking, said, Thailand's next. Those dimensions would add something to what I regard as an extraordinarily honest effort to evoke very difficult thing.
I want to say, in just by way of enlarged explanation, not necessarily in defense of this, that the films are not purely chronological chunks of time. They overlap. We deal with the same period from different perspectives in two other films. One which deals with Cambodia and Laos, and only very peripherally with Vietnam, and one which deals with the entire period from the perspective of the of Vietnam itself, its country and its people, with the Americans as a sort of secondary role. So it may be that at least one of those two points, I think, is probably adequately covered if someone is able to watch all of the programs. It's, you know, of course, a limitation of this medium that you can only do so much in 1 hour. And we've had to make a lot of very hard choices about things to leave out. In fact, it's like what I think, it reminds me of Hemingway's remark about writing, that the hardest job is knowing what to leave out. Yes?
I remember from those days there were enormous comments on from North Vietnam on the American puppets in the South. It was a difficult phrase to swallow, but if you read the history, even this film, which, as you say, leaves out more than it includes, we really never addressed the situation of South Vietnam stability. And these really were our puppets. We treated them cynically. We did not respect them. We did not have anything to base our military venture on. And I thought it was particularly telling when Johnson said, no more of this coup shit. We just got to have them shape up and make them stable. That embodied so much of American arrogance, I felt, because really we wanted to make a government in a nation we did not understand, and all of our efforts depended on that. So really all the military power was irrelevant if you could not create that situation. And I don't think the administrations ever addressed that. And we seem to repeat the same mistakes as though we learned nothing. In the beginning comments, it was said, if we do not absorb the trauma, we will repeat it to evoke it again somehow. And in Central America, I think we're building our faith on the same shoals of leaders who do not deserve our trust, do not have the people's trust. And this is the basic flaw in a sort of ideological straitjacket.
One of the things that became apparent to us in trying to recreate something of what those periods were like was that it's much easier in retrospect to make some sweeping judgment than it is at the actual time of decision making, to be clear. And so we have tried, and of course, whenever you interview anyone, particularly someone who had a prominent role to play in a historical period, there is some tendency toward revisionism. I think the most honest person in the world tends a little bit, because it's impossible to leave one's retrospective judgment behind in talking about it. But we tried very hard with everyone to get them to remember what it felt like then and what they thought they saw and what they thought they were doing. And that's why I think you do get so many conflicting viewpoints expressed, because that is the way people saw it then in conflict.
You obviously interviewed some North Vietnamese officials, and you showed what appeared to be some North Vietnamese film.
Would you discuss some of your undertakings in that regard and what sort of results you got?
Mm-hmm. One of the very first things that we did when we had our production group organized was to put everybody who could to work on trying to make contacts to the Vietnamese. We here in the States made contacts to the Vietnamese delegation at the United Nations. We had a British team working with us. And although they were working with us in Boston, of course, their management was in London. They got in touch with the Vietnamese embassy in London. The people at Antenne Deux, the French television network, also collaborating with us, in particular on the films on the French period, got in touch with the Vietnamese embassy there. We used every contact we had, people who were able, who had in background some personal association with any of these people in the various embassies and delegations, and just got into their hands all of the material that we had generated about how we were going to do the project and why we wanted to go there, and the fact that we were not going to do a current affairs program, but we were looking for people who could address certain specific historical incidents, battles, places, experiences. And after about a year and a half of that, suddenly one day, we had permission to go. And once we were there, we got, I would say, considering, excuse me, considering the fact that it's a third world country with a communist government, we got fairly good cooperation. It was not terribly bureaucratic. They generally delivered the kind of people we would ask for. For example, we asked for people who had committed acts of terror against American installations, and they gave us the Brinks Hotel guy. We also have in the Tet film, which you did not see, excuse me, another guerrilla who led the attack on the Saigon radio station, which was held for quite a few hours and then blown up by the remaining guerrillas. He's one who left before the end, obviously. And we went three times to Vietnam. Once a single producer went and just researched their archives and ordered footage. The second time, we, the Americans, went and filmed for 9 weeks. Excuse me. And then on the third occasion, the French crew went and filmed for an additional 5 weeks. It was sometimes easier to find Vietnamese who would talk about certain kinds of experiences in Vietnam. Particularly, I'm talking now about ordinary soldiers or villagers or whatever, than their equivalents in this country, many of whom seemed reluctant to go on camera and talk about their experiences. It took us quite a long time to find a number of representative Arvin soldiers who'd talk about what it was like to fight the VC or the North Vietnamese Army. I'm not quite sure why, but they're very shy and reluctant to come forward. Yes?
Before the movie tonight, you said you came back from Europe and that you noticed that we did not talk about the Vietnamese War. Well, I think the reason for it is that we didn't understand this war. It was a war that was so far away, and we were losing men. And when men did come back, they didn't want to talk about this war.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we didn't understand this war. It was such a cruel war. Then we started hearing about the drug problem along with this war, and that horrified us. I think that why we did not talk about this more.
I believe there's been a very considerable change just in the last 2 or 3 years. I think many more books have begun to be written. Many more Vietnam veterans have spoken up in a positive way about who they are, and they've as they say themselves, they've started to come out of the closet. I feel that that there is now the beginnings of a real attempt, of which conferences like this are certainly a part.
This is the end of side one. Please turn your tape over and continue on side two.